toe, you're good to go. Talk plumbing.
I would be sharing a cocktail with you virtually if I did not have to kill the water supply to my house and replace a toilet valve later on. Wow, that's a pretty sight. I don't even like beer, but you pouring that beer is a damn sexy thing right now.
I'm with you. I'm in the middle of a bathroom renovation, right? So plumbing is sort of my life, but there will be a bathroom functional at some point.
My bathroom's functional. It's just the valve's original, right? Where the pipe comes out of the wall, there's a valve. Nobody's touched the valve for 10
Did you
years.
touch the valve?
I did. I touched it in its unhappy place. And here we are.
I get that.
But so I'm in the middle of doing that. Otherwise, I would be partaking as well.
What was the phrase that you came up with last night?
Survival drinking.
It's snowing outside here. And of course, if you're listening to this in the middle of summer, because that's probably when we'll post it, we'll think back fondly on the snow. But right now, survival drinking is the way it is. And you can catch up after the plumbing. So I guess the next thing is welcome to episode four.
Of Totally That Stupid.
The podcast. Got like something on your camera. There's like a little schmutz.
I was wondering if that was.
Nope.
No.
It's not me. Oh, now it's gone. No. Oh, you know what? It must be a light reflection.
Yeah, it is because we've got the halogens in here. And when I sit back like this, there's a.
Did you just say the word halogen?
Yeah.
Halogen? Really?
Yeah. I have lighting people.
What was the name of the computer in 2001 A Space Odyssey? Hail?
Hal.
Hail?
Hal.
No.
Okay, this is coming from the guy that puts way too much emphasis on his WHs. So I don't want to hear
Yeah, just call me Stewie Griffin, right?
it. You kind of are.
Halogen, really? Really? Okay. All right. Well, episode four, here we go. I'm drinking, you're not.
And I'm not. I'm
So you'll be intelligent and I.
well, in as much as we ever are, really.
Well, okay, fair enough. So, where are we today? What do we got going besides some of us drinking and some of us not?
Some of us drinking, some of us not. There's not a lot automotively going on. I got to tell you, I'm a little bored.
That's because you
And
live in the Great White North.
yeah, but it's snowing where you are, and it's like 40 and beautiful where I am. So,
Is it really?
yeah, I mean, I went out to Home Depot twice because home improvement.
Oh, I see. We're following the COVID rules.
Hey, I mask up. I think at least in Minnesota, if you have a pickup truck, that's like a get out of mask free card.
Okay.
If you drive pretty much anything else, unless you're an old guy in a Buick, then you got to wear a mask. I'm pretty sure our governor wrote that down somewhere.
You know, I could find myself as an old guy in a Buick. Not politically, but certainly as far as being old, as we established before this call started, when neither of us could remember what we were going to talk about, that we literally talked about less than 24 hours ago.
Yeah.
But I like Buicks. I have been actively searching Buick Rivieras of just about every generation, except like the 73. I don't love the 73 Riviera. Get me from 73 to 80 or 70. 79, I guess, is when they did the C body, you know, when they did the update where it was a little bit smaller. There was a big old boat of a 73 Riviera for sort of an ungodly period of time, you know, around 73 to 79. But other than that, I love me a Riviera. I like the first one. I like the second one. I like the covered headlight one from like 68,
Beautiful
69.
cars, yeah.
And I actually like the 80s Riviera. You lose me in the late 80s, but the early 80s.
So you like the more square one.
And it's
So
bigger.
but then they made one in the mid 90s that was all sort of bulbous and weird.
Which in the mid 90s I thought was like pretty cool. Now it looks old.
It's very dated.
Yeah. That design did not age well. There is a part of me that still wants a big, stupid American car.
Well, we kind of went down that road recently. You see, you shot me like a Fairlane, and there was something else. And I didn't love the Fairlane because it was like red on white or something. But I get the idea. Oh, the other was that white on something LTD
I
convertible.
like the LTD.
Yeah, I kind of like that too.
But I think, as you've pointed out to me a number of times, I'd probably be happy with a car like that for, you know, 30 or 40 minutes.
Yeah.
I think it would be fun. I'd love a car that I could put the whole family in top down. I mean, we had a Mercedes 124 convertible for a while, 1993 300 CE. That was great because we could all fit in it. You put the top down. It was a good time. And there is something, I've never owned an American car.
No.
And I kind of want to. It's, you know, it's a thing.
It's a thing. You know, I think where you live, you have in pretty immediate access to some great back roads. Yeah. You know, twisty, turny, I don't know, horse paths that they sort of paved. I mean, they paved them, but you know, they're all twisty, turny. It's like, oh, there's a big tree in the middle of this path. We'll just make the road go around it.
Pretty much, yeah.
And they're great, great fun. I mean, I've had tremendous fun on those roads in your cars. I mean, well, actually, shoot, even in one or two of my cars when I lived on the East Coast. But that's not your big American convertible.
No.
Right?
No.
You know, I mean, yeah, you can make it handle, but it's a lot of car to hustle around. I mean, the aftermarket is vast for most of those cars, right? But it's...
You're not going to turn an LTD into a Miata.
No, but I mean, you can turn a, you know, a first gen Camaro or Firebird into something that isn't completely terrible, but it's never going to be a Miata. It's never going to be a Boxer. It's never going to be an E30 or a 190, you know, 2.316. Where I live, we have those roads too, but they're not right around here. You know, a car like a Le Mans convertible or, you know, whatever, an LTD.
Well, like a 442. I've got a thing for 442s lately.
442 would be great, right? Where I live, we do have those fun roads like you have, though not as many, but we also have really fast farm roads. And they have bends and curves and hills. It's a bit big for a Miata because you're not going to get everything out of a Miata on those roads. But, you know, I'm thinking of, you know, some of the drive-ins that, yeah, we can still go to in the COVID times, but those roads are not Miata roads. They're not even really 911 or, you know, Bavaria roads. They could be, you know, Le Mans convertible roads. They could be Fairlane roads, right? They're not as tight. They're not as twisty, but you can carry speed on them.
I'm going to go out on a limb. You brought up 911. I had an air-cooled 911. It was an 88 Targa. It was a gorgeous car. I don't love it.
Yeah.
And honestly, even on those fun, twisty back roads, it wasn't that fun.
Mm-hmm.
I had more fun in a Miata. I had more fun in an Alpha Spider. But I think that one of the things I've learned about myself in my almost half a century of life, and certainly what, you know, 1987 to now, I don't know, what's that, 34 years of driving. God.
Math.
Is that I like to squeeze a slightly lower powered car full out, as opposed to having a higher powered car that I can't push to the limits. And honestly, the rear engine dynamics of the 911 didn't, at least of the early car, didn't suit me. I love the Boxster. I've had two Boxsters and the mid-engine balance. I love that on the back roads, particularly, oddly enough, the lower powered one, the base model. What did I have? A 2000 with the 2.7 and the 5-speed. That car was a blast to drive. I dumb cars you wish you hadn't sold. That one was a tremendously fun car. The Boxster S had a lot of power, but it was like too much for those kind of roads.
Mm-hmm.
And the 911 was a lot of fun. It was very analog in so many ways with the very heavy steering. And yeah, I mean, you know, the back end could trick you out or catch you out. And I didn't love driving that. Now, I have wondered if I would like a coupe or even a cabrio better than the Targa. The Targa was a pain in the ass.
I find myself not looking at Targas after you had your Targa because it was a pain in the ass.
And I love the way they look. I love the look of the Targa. Mm-hmm. But the cabrio has a roof I can fold up.
Right.
The coupe may have a sunroof. The Targa has a thing that I've got to either take off and fold up. Of course, they tell you not to fold it up. these days, because that might ruin the vinyl, or you have a big panel that sits in your garage, which is great until you're an hour and a half away on the Skyline Drive and it starts to rain.
Drive faster.
There is that.
You know, when we do the BMW club drives, when we did them, I like having the hot rod back roads BMW. I wouldn't take a larger car on that.
It's a tough thing. I mean, there's almost something I do find that there's a little bit of fun in sort of a big, heavy car that you're bombing around the back roads, and it's a little bit of a handful.
I don't disagree with that. I think, you know, on the back roads, like from your house, your mom's house, or, you know, any of the fun back roads there, I think that's one thing. When we do these BMW club tours, because you're with a big group of people and they're all in essentially stock or built back roads BMWs, I don't want to have to hustle a big car with marginal brakes that I can't just, you know, back off after a while and let things cool down, right? You know, for that kind of thing, you want a car that the brakes aren't going to go away.
Well, and that's one of the things you reminded me when we were looking at, I was looking at, there was that red Firebird convertible that was on the surface a pretty cool car. It was very original. I want to say it was a 4-speed, wasn't it?
It was.
And like, it still had PMD, Pontiac Motor Division hubcaps. It was a neat car. But as you started looking closer, one of the things that really sticks out in my mind about that car is no power brakes.
Yeah. Yeah, it was now, a low option car.
In this day and age, no power brakes is not something that you or I are used to, or or most people in our, you know, approximate age group, whatever. That's a heavy pedal.
Well, so it's a heavy pedal. And thinking back on that car, it was a 400 4-speed with no power brakes. I don't remember if it had power steering.
It did not.
So it was, you know, somebody likely ordered that car to do one thing, and stopping and turning were neither of those things.
And that car on the back roads between here and my mother's house would probably kill me on day one or maybe day four.
Yeah. Because I think we decided it had drums in the front also.
We did. But at the same time, there are upgrade kits. There are all that. What do you want to put into it? So that car, I don't remember what the asking price was on it, but I want to say it was in the 20s. So do you spend another, you know, $2,000 on disc brakes and a power booster? You know, how much do you put in?
Well, right. You can make it handle. You can make it stop. But then it's not a nice original 400 4-speed anymore.
Right.
You know, you can put bear brakes on it. You can put a Hotchkiss suspension in it. And it'll be a lot of fun.
I could put a whole Edelbrock catalog on the motor. I mean, you know, right. Edelbrock.
And again, I'm just kind of bored.
You know,
like that mental exercise, I don't even have the cycles for it. I'm just we're kind of in the, you know, we're in the dead of winter and there's not much interesting for sale around here. There's nothing I'm really excited to bring home. Although that said, I was, you know, surfing around for E32 BMWs and I came across a 72 Bavaria in Chicago for $3,600.
How is there a 72 Bavaria in Chicago? Question one. And question two, does it run?
Doesn't say anything about that. Selling my E3 Bavaria that's been parked since 1999 in a garage. Very solid body and very complete car. Interior is clean and all there. It's an automatic, but that's a solvable problem. Again, it's a project. We'll need work, but it's a great car to save and restore. And that's all he says about it. I think at one point it was Polaris. Now it's not ish.
So when you say not, are we saying like yellow or
it's, you know how Polaris
which is silver,
which is silver, yellows after a while, it gets like that nasty yellow tinge. That's everywhere on this car.
Oh, so somebody did a color match at the wrong place on the car.
I don't know that they did because
they used their little light meter in the wrong spot to match the color.
But it's uniformly off, like door jams everywhere else.
No, that's what I mean. You know, they have that little, you know, that sight thing that says this is the color, you know, that the paint shops have.
Yeah.
And so they took a paint sample on one of those yellowed shock towers or something.
I think so, because, you know, looking at it, this car looks exactly like Frankenbav did when we dragged that thing out of a field in East Palo Alto. Like, it just has that worn silver look to it.
And I encourage everybody, anybody, somebody who's listening to Google Frankenbav.
Yeah.
That's a great story for another day, but it's a great car to be picked up at the airport in. So, you know, we're talking about the American car thing. And one of the things that comes to my mind is I love 60s muscle cars, right? I mean, you know, we've talked for years, and, you know, anybody that's read our blog has seen it. We love Dodge Chargers. We love Pontiac Le Manses. We love all these things. But I kind of like some of the newer cars. And some of them I'm proud of, and some of them I'm frankly, well, not. When my family moved back from overseas in 1984, the car that we went to look at, well, we looked at a lot of cars. We looked at a Buick Park Avenue. We looked at a couple other things, but my parents wanted a station wagon. And when we lived overseas in Hong Kong, folks, which for those that don't know, is a right-hand drive. Anyway, they had a Mercedes wagon over there that the company paid for. Well, the company was going to pay for a car in the States too, but they had a, I think the dollar limit was $18,000, and it had to be American. That was the rule.
I remember you telling me it had to be American because we all landed back in Connecticut at the same time.
Right, which was really bizarre.
Is really bizarre. You guys who had lived overseas and had interesting cars, and you guys had that Fiat too that you couldn't get here.
We had a Fiat 132, we had a Volkswagen Passat, yep. And we had an Opel Ascona,
yep,
and we had the Mercedes 280 TE.
Yeah. And then you guys moved back, and all of a sudden it's like you have to lease an American company car, and we're like, really? Because, like, my dad just got an Audi.
Yeah, well, okay, start with F you, but we'll circle back on that in a minute. But yeah, so my folks wanted a station wagon, and the Pontiac, you know, they were Pontiac people. They had had a wide track. My dad always talked about the wide track Bonneville from the early 60s. And when I was young, we had a Le Mans. I've talked about that before. 69 Le Mans that my mother ran over a rock with. And apparently, just so you know, my good friend in podcasting, my mother has been privy to some of our podcast discussions going back to the snake episode.
Did she comment directly on you calling her a crazy old lady?
No, she commented to my sister, who is our our dear producer, who
our ersatz producer
who I'm out to lunch on whether or not. Anyway, I still have an inheritance, I think, so we'll roll with that. Anyway, so my mother ran over a rock in the 69 Le Mans. But anyway, I still remember we went to the Pontiac dealer, which was actually right across the street from Stu Leonard's in Norwalk. It was the Pontiac dealer. They rolled that brown and white Pontiac Le Mans out, and we got in it and drove home. Cool car. My mother ran over a rock. Your dad and my dad tried to fix that because basically what she did is she dented the oil pan, which made a thunka thunka noise. Thunka 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 thunka. Anyway, they got the engine halfway out, said, screw this, probably went back to their respective scotch and water and scotch and soda, put it all back together, and that car went thunka 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 till it died somewhere in the care of one of my cousins. But Pontiacs were sort of the American cars that my parents subscribed to. And so we came back from overseas, and the Pontiac 6000 A-body, it was 1984, so we were shopping for an 85. Mm-hmm. Bought the Pontiac 6000 or leased it, whatever. Anyway, decent enough car for the time, 2.8 liter. We had the carbureted version, which was not as good as the injected version. It was not a Pontiac 6000 STE, which was the cool one with the tune
port injection.
I was actually going to say suede seats, but yes. And the inflator in the trunk and all that happy stuff. Because the 6000 with the six headlights, that was the cool car. I mean, there were so many articles back in the day about the 6000 versus the Audi 5000S.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, our parents getting these cars at the same time. It's like, all right, you're getting the Audi 5000. Yeah, it's pretty. It's cool. We're getting the 6000 wagon with the carburetor.
Well, the funny thing is that started a trend. I don't know if you realize this. This started a trend for me of getting the car.
Of lording over me?
Of lording over you? No. I mean, yes, but no.
Anyway, go ahead.
So this started the trend of getting the car you want, but not the model level, the model mm-hmm. grade you want, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. So like, all, you know, Road and Track, Car and Driver, automobile wasn't even a thing yet. Probably Motor Trend, but nobody read Motor Trend back then. You know, they did the 6000 STE against the 5000 Turbo, against, you know, the Peugeot 505 Turbo and whatever else was in that segment at the time. We didn't get those cars. We got the 5000S, and you got the Pontiac 6000. Period.
we didn't even get the little badge underneath that said fuel injection.
No, you didn't get that badge. You did not get an LE badge. You sure as hell didn't get an STE badge. So, I mean, and that kind of started the trend like years
later.
There
is a story. There's a story to the LE badge. In 1985, the LE was not available with the console.
Oh.
My parents wanted bucket seats because they had a 1982 Mercedes 280 TE station wagon. And now they were relegated to, this is my words, not theirs, to a Pontiac 6000, period.
And actually, you had another car in there.
What, you had to bring up the Mercury?
Yeah, I am. And the reason I'm going to bring that car up is
Dick.
That's the other reason I'm going to bring it up. But the main reason I'm going to bring it up is I actually saw a preposterously clean Mercury Topaz the other day, driving around Minnesota in winter. And I thought, you know, if I weren't driving, I would take a picture of that and send it to you.
So a dark blue Mercury Topaz with gray vinyl interior. Yeah, that was the longest rental car I think my family ever had. And that was a 6-month rental because there were production delays for the Pontiac 6000. So we ordered the car in September, October. It didn't show up until like February, March, because most of it was built in Canada and there were strikes and production delays and all that kind of stuff. And so I actually had a sick day from school. It was my 8th grade year when that car was delivered. My mother was not amused because I knew that was the day the car was coming, and I damn sure was going to be home when the new car came.
You were going to make damn sure you were home to see off the Topaz.
Yeah, I mean, I think the Topaz went away a few days later. I just remember it was from Budget Rent-A-Car, and it was the car that my sister got her driver's license on, which, interestingly enough, she also got rear-ended in and dented the bumper. The Topaz was a car. The 6000 was a car. And it actually, you know, endured my getting my driver's license, which is a whole different story for a different podcast on a different day. And I showed up to your bar mitzvah in a Pontiac with a dented front fender.
I remember that also because
we were all drunk.
Well, yeah,
incidentally, at your bar mitzvah.
No, that didn't happen. I think that was, I don't remember if that was the accident you had in one of the two 6000 wagons or it was later on, but I distinctly remember pulling off the remains of a 6000 badge
off
the
fender. That was
that car. Like, the fender's all bashed in. The badge is falling off. I went over and, like, flicked it, and it fell off, and you lost your mind.
It was bad enough that I had a car accident less than a year after I got my driver's license.
Right.
Now, that car, interestingly enough, the following summer, so that was sort of a winter after I got my driver's license in July. The following summer, I had another car accident in the same car. Took it to the same body shop. That was the accident where I rear-ended a brand new Mercedes, who then, in turn, hit the pickup truck in front of him. And the Mercedes came out looking a little bit like a Saab with a sloped down front end and a sloped down rear end.
Nice.
And that car ended up at the same body shop as our car did, which was the same body shop we had used at the previous accident, where A, the guy knew me and laughed at me when it got dropped off, and B, told me that the repair on that Mercedes, because it was at the same body shop, exceeded $35,000.
Nice. Good solid work there, man.
So I was skilled.
That's outstanding.
So I have had exposure to American cars. And I've driven American cars, and I don't hate American cars. In fact, I mean, there are some that are on my short list.
Yeah.
I love the Pontiac G8 GT, GTX, whatever the one where you could get with a stick shift is.
The sedan, the G8.
The G8.
Yeah, but you like the Holdens. You like the four-door Holden and the two-door Holden.
Yeah, yeah. So the GTO and the GT, but it's not the GT. It's like the GTX or whatever that you could actually get the stick in, which is the same car underneath as the Chevy SS that they made for a couple of years.
Yep.
Fantastic car. It's supposed to have a great driving dynamic. It's supposed to be a terrific car. And they compared it to the BMW E39 M5.
Right. So they actually shot that. It was one of the magazines. I don't remember if it was Automobile or Road and Track. I should look it up. But they did the E39 M5 against the G8, you know, the Pontiac version of the E39 M5. And they shot that in Marin County up and down Route 1. And I remember, I remember that. I see that. Yeah. But I agree. I don't see any of these cars being keeper cars. And I like going even a little bit older. I am a sucker for the downsized. It started in 1978. The downsized, what was the A body became the G body, right? Malibu, El Camino, the Olds Cutlass Supreme, the Buick Regals, all those front engine rear drive ones, obviously before they went front engine front drive. The A body went from the rear drive and then it became, I think it was in 82, it became the front drive,
right?
You know, with the Celebrity and the 6000, yep. Or maybe 83.
That's right. No, 82.
And that's when the cars that I'm talking about went to the G platform. You know, I will always be a sucker for a two-door, you know, either the Pontiac or a Regal or a Cutlass Supreme. Not so much Monte Carlo. I like the Monte Carlo, but I think you can do better.
I like a Grand Prix G body with the gauge package.
Yep.
I like the Cutlass Supreme two-door with the console and the gauge package.
Yep.
And they use the fake wood on all of them.
Yep.
You know? Still a neat car.
I like me some Petro wood. So my dad had this guy who worked for me as a sales rep for my dad. And he didn't live in the area. This was still in Connecticut. But he showed up one day in a rental. I think it was a Regal, a two-door Regal.
Mm-hmm.
Bench seats. And it had the pillow top seats, you know, like the coffin-y, the coffin velour. And man, that was a cool car even back then. I would do one of those.
One of the guys that would give me a ride from various, my high school had mandatory sports. And one of the things that I would do was cop rides off of people. And there was a guy that lived not far from me that had a 79 Buick Regal. So it was the older style of the newer G body.
Yep.
And it was pale blue, like every surface, exterior, interior. I think it was metallic on the outside, but it was a pale blue Buick Regal. And we gave this guy such a raft of crap about this car. But, you know, A, it got me home. And right. B, it was kind of a fun car.
That's it. I mean, I really like those. And look, I like Grand Nationals and I like GNXs and I think they're super cool. And I like 442s and all that. But I don't even want that. I want a V8, preferably console, full gauges. I don't even need T-tops. I like T-tops. It's part of the shtick. I get it, but I don't need them.
But there's a problem with that. Is I was just looking at an 84 Olds 442 with the T-tops and the console and the gauge package. Mm-hmm. So it's that body, and the guy wanted almost $30,000.
Yeah,
and I mean, I know as well as you do, as well as anybody probably listening to this does, that it's a strangled 5-liter motor.
Mm-hmm. It's like 140 horsepower on its
day
ever.
It may put out, I don't know, 210, 220 pound feet of torque, but it's still can't hardly get out of its own way.
Mm-hmm. No.
Now, is that a car to, you know, drop a, you know, an LS whatever in and make it do something? Yeah, maybe. I don't even know if you can fit that in that car.
You can. It's like so many of these other cars. There's nothing unknown about them and everybody's done everything. So if you want to put a, you know, an LS3 truck motor in it, there's a kit for that. I think for a lot of these engines, though, you don't even have to. I think it's just bolt-on stuff, and you can have a car that can at least get out of its own way.
No, I think that's fair.
And again, is that a keeper car? I don't think so, but I think it'd be kind of fun for a little while. And you've got a little bit, you know, even the pedestrian ones, spec'd as we're talking about, whether, you know, with the V8, a console, some gauges, those are $15,000 to $20,000 cars now. Thanks, Radwood. I mean, it's, you know, everything's more expensive than you think it should be.
Well, and of that generation GM car, I mean, the only one that's really gotten the real traction is the Grand National / GNX. Mm-hmm. I mean, the GNX is the queen mother of all of them.
Right.
Grand Nationals are, you know, close behind because, I mean, the Pontiac, yeah, they put the aero back on, which was not the same aero back as they put on the SS Chevy. That's actually an interesting factoid that I didn't know until fairly recently, is they put those bubble backs on each of those cars, but they're not the same.
Hmm.
And the Chevy is actually a better performer than the Pontiac. The Pontiac is a turd. And, you know, as American cars go, I grew up a Pontiac guy. Mm-hmm. And you kind of go, damn, I can't get behind that. I want the Buick. Who in the world, or in North America, apparently in China, it's all the rage, but in North America, who says, I want the Buick? You know, in my mid-80s or late-80s, you know, whatever car.
Yeah, now I know. I'm surfing now. We did tell our producer we wouldn't live surf. But I'm just doing a quick look in places where these cars
don't rust. We also told her we wouldn't ramble on for this long.
Oh, yeah. But, you know, I'm looking for mid-80s G bodies with a console. Because I figure if you get one that doesn't have the full gauges, you can probably figure out the full gauges. It's probably some wires and a gauge package.
Right.
But switching one from column shift to console shift would be a pain in the butt. Mm-hmm.
I gotta have a console on a car like that. Console. I mean, I have had one car that didn't have a console shift. I think just one, mm-hmm. which was the 2013 Mercedes E-Class.
Yeah.
And yeah, it makes a great tray when I'm going to McDonald's and buying drinks. And my wife's 2011 E-Class wagon has that nice tray, which is handy for me. My hand naturally looks for a shifter to hold on to.
Honestly, mine does too. And I mean, I'm driving around in my Subaru Outback today on my multiple trips to Home Depot because plumbing, and I find myself resting my hand on the shifter. It's an automatic, by the way. And you know, and the funny thing is I don't really do it in the 330, which is a stick, which you shouldn't do anyway because bad for transmission, blah blah blah. I don't know if I really buy all that, but that's fine.
There's a shifter there. I'm resting my hand on it. Even if I have to apply the logic my father gave me when I had the Alpha Spider that you, you know, with the sensitive second gear synchros, which was pretend there is an egg between your hand and the top of the shift knob.
Mm-hmm.
So that the whole being gentle. Now, I mean, obviously that doesn't apply with, you know, a 94 Miata, which someday I might have.
You still talking about that?
Shh. We covered that in a previous podcast, my friend.
Right.
But, you know, be gentle. It's a machine. Respect the machinery, right?
Right.
You know, yeah. And so,
Mechanical sympathy is a thing.
You can rest your hand, but do it casually. Now, automatic transmission shifter, shit, all bets are off.
Yeah. So I could see doing the American car thing for a little while. It would just be a fun car. Yeah, we talk about how do we use a car, right? You do your McDonald's run in the morning for Diet Cokes without ice, and I go pick up takeout. And I think that's what these cars would be.
Mm-hmm.
The thing that I have trouble with is I've got limited space right now, and I don't have the attention span for a fourth car. You know, I can't get rid of the convertible, not getting rid of the Subaru. And I like having the Backroads BMW for the fun, you know, pretty hardcore driving. So do I want a fourth car? Do I want a G body? I mean,
honestly, you know, when the weather's better, I think you do. Right now, because you're looking outside and you don't want to deal with scraping off a car and moving it around and all that. No, you don't.
I don't want to deal with that.
If you have an empty garage space like I kind of have right now at my mother's house, which hopefully has no snakes in it at this point.
I think you'd know by now.
Probably. Yeah. I mean, you know, there is that part of me that is actively sort of perusing things like Porsche 928, but there's a space that is a void that needs to be filled. What you've got to do is get your parents to get rid of, I don't know, the Z3, so you have a place to put another car.
Yeah, but see, I don't want to do that because I want the Z3. I have actually replaced the 5-speed manual transmission on a 1.9 liter Z3.
Really?
They weigh nothing. When I worked for Bill, we had somebody come in. They broke first gear, probably trying to cram it in there while rolling. And we said, okay, well, like a transmission's, I don't know, $2,500 and another grand to put it in with a clutch. And the guy says, go ahead and do it. I swear to God, like lightest transmission ever. It was lovely. Hmm. So to put a 5-speed in that car, yeah. Okay. I mean, you could do it on your back. I might not recommend it, but you could.
Well, okay. So then you're just, then you're just waiting to inherit a car, aren't you?
Well, my dad does drive it. I think he drove it a little bit this past year.
If only you had a classic Datsun you could drive.
I know. Well, in the garage, what is potentially the new house, I would be able to put a fourth car sideways across the back. It would eat up any sort of workshop space, but there is room for a car back there.
So, I mean, if anybody listening is wondering, there is a Datsun in play right here.
Yeah. So we have had in the family, I think we've probably mentioned this before, we have a 67.5 Datsun Roadster, 1600. Well, it's got to be
late 80s.
30 years?
Yeah.
Over 30 to 33. It's
gotta be like 87, 88, something like that.
So I was working for Elon in Norwalk.
89, 90, 91.
And I was driving. I had the Rabbit.
Yeah.
So it must have been 89, 90. So, I mean, it's easily 30 years. Mm. And yeah, it's all there. It needs some deferred maintenance, but it's a nice car that somebody should really drive.
It's a great little car, and it's not a beautiful, you know, restored whatever, but it's a good little car.
Well, it was a California car that made its way to Connecticut. Mechanically, it had been all rebuilt. And this is, again, 30 years ago. It was all rebuilt. The body was a little tired. It needed paint. The guy fishtailed in it and whacked the rear quarter panel.
Didn't Armando, the body guy, work on it?
Adalberto was a frigging artist, and he put the body back together. There's virtually no filler in it. It was completely rust free. It still is.
Somebody did drag a carpet across it.
Yeah. Well, the problem is it sat in my parents' garage for a long time and now it's in storage, but you know, a fuel pump and probably some fresh gas and it'd be a happy camper.
I think to this day, that's one of my wife's favorite convertible rides that she's ever had, was riding with you in that car. That car makes a hell of a good raspy noise, right? Mm.
I don't even remember taking your wife out in that car. I must. I mean,
it's, oh, I'll be sure and tell her that.
I don't remember what I had for dinner last night, dude.
Back to being old guys that talk about cars.
like this.
I think maybe that's a good place to stop. What do you think? Yeah,
that's probably fine.
We'll pick up on G-body GM cars next time. But in the meantime, hey, leave us comments. Tell us what you want to talk about.
Yeah.
And tell us if you want to talk to us. We're doing this stuff on Zoom. If you want to talk to us, we can loop you in if you got something to talk about. So let's do it. Yeah. So anyway, my name is Reed Hitchcock.
And I'm Jonathan Bush.
And this is Totally That Stupid,
the podcast where nobody can remember anything.
All right.
Till next time.